How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. A fake spring like the one we saw earlier this week is a welcome reminder that real spring will come eventually. That means a change in wardrobe, but fast fashion can cause a lot of environmental problems. Some environmental watchdogs say that by 2050, the fashion industry could make up a quarter of all carbon emissions. For ideas for creating alternatives to fast fashion, we spoke to Mireya Fouché, co-founder of Monarch Thrift Shop in Avondale, Kate Van Asten, who is the founder of Wolfka, a Chicago size-inclusive sustainable clothing line, and to round it out, Karen Weigert, Reset's sustainability contributor. We began with Karen walking us through the biggest environmental issues in the life cycle of clothing.
One thing to start with is that the amount of clothing and textiles is actually growing. So if you go back to 2000, it was something like 50 billion pieces were created a year, and that's doubled. Roughly. So let's start with it's growing. And then it's the question of what goes into the production of clothing, what happens when we're using clothing, and then what happens at the end in disposal. And the big picture is it's 8 to 10% of global carbon emissions are actually coming from this space. Mm-hmm. It's up to maybe 2.5% of all agricultural land is for cotton, just for clothing. So you can think about it that way. So there's this tremendous amount of water use that's involved here. And then you've got the solid waste parts at the end. So just even at that big picture, it's the resources to produce, what happens then while we are using them, and then what happens at the end with the incredible growth and the amount of disposal that's happening.
And you know, it kind of fascinates me that this is not common knowledge. I feel like a lot of people walk around having no idea that what they're wearing may be this problematic. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a great question because you see it in the micro, in your daily life. But if you put it in the macro, the fact that most people today actually buy more clothing than they did a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So you multiply that by the many people who are able to afford more clothing, and it scales. And you see the clothing when it's with you. You don't see it being produced typically.
That's right.
And then it goes away, and away isn't something that you're likely seeing on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm. So, Mireya, can you explain the role of a circular economy in reducing waste? And first, just fill us in for folks who may not know the term, what a circular economy is.
Yes. Yeah, so circular economy, Monarch Thrift Shop operates as a circular economy because we receive textiles and items and we put them back into the community. So rather than having to purchase your firsthand, you're going second. That's why it's called secondhand shopping.
Right.
So Monarch Thrift Shop, that's the whole basis of our business, is being a circular economy because we receive donations and then we resell them at a very affordable price. But not only resell them, but we redistribute them into different spaces and nonprofit organizations to help support their efforts as well.
Yeah. So in spite of all of this, the environmental issues that Karen laid out and that we'll talk further about, you and Kate are doing things differently, right? So I want to start with you telling us about your approach at your stores, Monarch and Monarch Luxe. Tell us more.
Yeah, absolutely. So Monarch Thrift Shop was founded by myself and Krista Klumpner in 2015. So this is our 10th year in business.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
Thank you. We are the largest independently owned nonprofit thrift store in the Chicago area. We currently have 4,000 square feet. And 4,000 square feet basically is filled with products that were donated to us. The items that are donated to us are then sold. But the reason that we sell the items, it really goes back to supporting our program. So we're a nonprofit thrift store, social enterprise. We provide job training and just economic empowerment for individuals who are facing hardship. So that is the basis of our business. But for being a circular business, it's finding products and pricing them at a place that can have the products to be moved. our focus is on quantity and quality. So we ensure that our prices are affordable so that they don't just stay in the back and in the house.
Yes.
But well enough.
Which happens often.
It does, especially in the thrift industry.
So often.
But we price it well enough so that it can be moved. But the items that are not moved are then redistributed to different nonprofits and organizations. So that is the 4,000 square feet of Monarch Thrift Shop. It is very, very well curated. You're basically shopping a retail store because of the way that it's merchandised. We want to be sure to provide integrity in the things that we sell and just the space that is a welcoming environment.
Yeah.
With Monarch Luxe, that has been launched for a year now. Monarch Luxe was a trial process. Like, what do we do?
It's a little pilot project.
It was a pilot project that has worked amazingly well, right? So I have this thing personally. I travel and I thrift and I travel.
Yeah.
That's like my thing, right?
Yeah.
So when I travel to Spain, and I kind of see how things are done there. And what I learned was that they have 200 square feet of a resale and thrift stores, and they're very, very intentional about their products and their prices. And recognizing that the items that we've been receiving at Monarch have been great, high quality products with new price tags, we can't sell them on our base floor because of the sticker shock. We're very mindful of our customers. So ensuring that we price according to a way that can be received by our customers, we'll still have our customers coming back to us, thus having clothes moving quickly, you know?
I see. Okay.
That's the end of the game, is we don't want to hang on to stuff because why?
Reusing.
Exactly.
Reusing.
So
yeah.
Monarch Luxe is 300 square feet that we have created a house and curated just for luxe items. And for us, our goal with Monarch Luxe is to help customers reimagine what luxury looks like. So we're not just saying Coco Chanel. We're saying Chanel in addition to a handmade product that has an intricate design or textiles that we rarely see, like 100% silk, 100% cotton. These are items that are kind of hard to come across nowadays because we see polyester everywhere. So Monarch Luxe is really a way to house these higher price products that are still priced in a competitive way. So our customer is, you know, our customer comes in and they purchase $10 pieces and then they go to Monarch Luxe to treat themselves.
Mm.
Monarch Luxe still ranges from $20 to $100.
So it's
extremely affordable. Yes.
Yeah. So I want to bring Kate in here because you are, whereas Maria is reusing clothing, you're producing them differently from the get-go. So you do all the designing and the sewing for Wolfka clothing at your house.
That's right. So my studio is in my home. There's also one sewist who helps me out a lot.
Good.
But we use sustainable fabric, so cellulosic, so anything from a plant. So we use cotton, hemp, but also reconstituted cellulosic fibers like rayon and Tencel, with an emphasis on organic and Okotek certified. So there's nothing nasty in the dyes or the finishes. Just because plant-based fibers are breathable, they will eventually break down at end of life. They are biodegradable. And it's just better for your body and better for the earth.
Yeah. So you're doing natural dyeing, right? And you've got some samples of clothing here in the studio for me to take a look at. First of all, this shirt, what am I holding? It's a sweater, I believe. Oh, yeah. This is super soft.
Isn't it lovely?
Tell me more about what went into this.
So that is the Tencel and organic cotton French terry.
Mm.
And
no wonder.
Yeah. Every year I do a couple of pieces with natural dyes. You know, it's something that's very labor intensive, so I don't do it for everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a labor of love. And that one is a color blocked sweatshirt.
And the color looks great.
The colors are gorgeous.
It looks
so gold, it's a bubblegum pink, and a chocolate brown. And these are just things that I got either from my garden or from foraging.
Incredible. Karen, let's unpack a couple of things here. Maria talked about polyester, you know, the textile production and dyeing. All of this releases harmful chemicals. So can you just talk about why they're problematic and some of the health hazards that we're dealing with here?
Yeah, the conversation about polyester and plastics is incredibly important because most of the textiles produced now do have them in it. Anything that has a little bit of stretch is probably got a piece of plastic in there. And you might see a button that's plastic or you might see some stitching that's plastic, but it's actually in the fabric typically.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Until researching this topic.
So, and most people don't, to your earlier comment. And when you think of plastic, you think of a plastic bottle of water and you know you're supposed to have your own water bottle.
The jeans I'm wearing or the sweater I'm wearing could possibly have microplastics in there.
So it's absolutely in there. And so then you have the question again of how is that product created and the chemical process there, the water that's contaminated that happens around it. So you have the whole production process, which can be dirty and can be challenging, particularly folks who are working in it and who are close to it. And then you have the question of when you're wearing it. And the small piece that we're all learning more about is the microplastics question. And so things like fleeces or other items have the opportunity to break, and the small piece of that plastic is now breaking off in the air, in the water, on your skin, and we're now finding them absolutely everywhere. So we're learning more about what that might mean, but both from a production and then from an ongoing use standpoint, there's a lot happening with plastics being so embedded in textiles.
What, Maria, does Monarch do to reduce waste? Because I imagine you get a lot of donations.
We do. We have an entire production system set up in our back room. Logistics are well thought out. So for us, for instance, we, on an annual basis, we divert 50,000 pounds per year. Mind you, we're a small thrift store. And for us to divert 50,000 pounds per year is large.
That's a lot.
That goes out through, we have partnership with the textile company where they recycle the pieces. And we have a backdoor strategy and a front door strategy. We, you know, front door is, you know, selling pieces. So we sell an annual, I don't know, somewhere between like 100,000 pieces per year that go out the front door. And then the 50,000 pounds out the back door. We do a lot of divert pieces, keeping it out of the landfill, sending it to textile companies, breaking it down, sending pieces to different nonprofits. So everything that we have, that we receive, has a purpose and a place to go. Nothing goes into the trash for us.
So I mean, so thrift stores are still contributing to the problem of waste.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? This is not an end-all, be-all solution here.
And, you know, and I love that you mentioned that, because for many of us, even myself and Krista, we have these questions and conversations all the time. We hold ourselves accountable. For us, we ask the hard questions to ourselves. Okay, if we are diverting 50,000 pounds per year, what else can we do with these items? How can we upcycle them? How can we decrease the number going back into the textile companies to get them into the hands for better use? How can we partner with fashion designers or community colleges or some way to really upcycle the products, to really extend the life? So a lot of that is being accountable to yourself and asking yourself these hard questions and facing yourself and being like, what is the next solution for the problem that you're still being a part of?
Yeah. Kate, talk me through some of the challenges for you in resisting fast fashion.
You know, it's been a joy. You know, the problems, I guess, is there's not a lot of wholesale accounts that I can go to. There aren't a lot of boutiques that carry this price point, especially in the plus sizes.
And you started this 12 years ago, so you must have seen some trends over the years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's definitely more. And you know, my customers are definitely more aware, and they are fantastically educated, and they know the questions to ask, and they know what the different buzzwords mean. Mm-hmm. And we're able to have very nuanced conversations about it.
Karen, how difficult is that? Just completely avoiding fast fashion and all of the things that come with those clothing choices.
It takes a little bit of work, but I don't think it takes a ton.
Because fast fashion's everywhere.
It's absolutely everywhere. But I think one of the questions is starting with that, how much does a person need to buy in the coming year? And so if thinking about it that way, the first question is quite honestly, it's the buying less part. Mm-hmm. And that helps you avoid it quite simply. Yeah. And then there is the intentionality about what pieces does someone need in their wardrobe, or does their child need, or do they think will be important in the coming season? And then there's that opportunity to look for natural fibers as an anchor. Mm-hmm. And that can be thrifted, that can be secondhand. Broadly, the secondhand clothing space is exploding. Most people have now bought something secondhand at this point in the U.S. And some of that is online, and much of that is in person, as Medea is talking
about.
One
of my daughters makes a game out of it. She just goes from store to store. She's having a ball.
Thrifting is a thing.
It's a thing. It's fun. And you get some fabulous pieces.
You absolutely
some of
do.
The pieces that I get the most compliments on were thrifted. And I love to be able to say, oh, got this from such and such thrift store.
Well, there you go. You're absolutely on it. So there, it's fun.
Yes.
But so absolutely, it's thinking about what do you need? Where can you get it? What do you want it to be comprised of? And then asking questions. You know, what's the brand? How do they produce? What are some of the elements? And you get that chance at production, but you get a totally different chance when you're buying secondhand.
Yeah.
And you've already reduced your environmental impact there.
And you talked about fleece earlier. So if someone wants a fleece, what are their options?
So if you're thinking about a fleece to add to your wardrobe, the first question is, where's the fleece going to come from?
You're right.
Is it a new fleece, or is it a fleece that's pre-owned? And you by buying the pre-owned, you've already reduced production for another item. So that's the whole story, really,
right,
when you think about reusing a fabric and reusing an item. And then the question is, well, what do you do once you have it? And it's the use part and how we treat the fabrics and how you can think about both the cleanliness, the cleaning, and then the extension of life. So a wild card with the fleece is they're creating a lot of little microplastics when they're being washed. Mm-hmm. So many brands at this point will recommend spot cleaning. So once you have that fleece, we've made that choice of how to get it into your home. How do you maintain it in a way that's fitting your needs, but also reducing your environmental impact? Probably a spot clean when you can is a way to get multiple benefits.
Well, we heard from listener Lauren Vallone. Now, they're an avid secondhand shopper of natural fiber clothes who finds deals on Facebook groups. Let's listen.
Some, but not all, of more expensive, slower fashion brands hold up better. So they really lend themselves to being passed on or like resold, especially children's clothes. They go through sizes so quickly. So often people are reselling clothes that are like barely used, or they're selling clothes that have been well used, but still have a lot of life in them. Like me personally, I don't care if I buy leggings for my super active kid that have holes in the knees, because I know they're just going to like get more holes, or they're like a good base layer, or I'm happy to like patch it up for them to use. Adult clothes, sometimes people invest in like more expensive brands that end up not working for them, and they like don't want to go through the complicated return process, so they resell it. There's even really specific groups like plus size natural fiber clothing. There's a ton of wool groups I'm a part of that are like European brands, and they're imported here, so you're not like paying again to ship it across the ocean.
Yeah, Lauren also recommends knowing your measurements. That is key. Your thoughts listening to that, Maria?
I agree. I mean, I agree wholeheartedly there. We're also a part of clothing swaps. Clothing swap is another trend where we also donate a ton of products to different communities who are hosting clothing swaps, because let's get it out there. Let's get it out there and let's find a way to buy less.
And Kate, when we talk about sustainable fashion, one of the realities here is the price point for sustainable fashion, not always accessible. Absolutely. How do you work around that?
You know, my prices are high, and that's what things cost. And that does make it out of reach for a lot of people. There are other opportunities. You know, you can buy from small brands when there are sales. You can thrift, you can upcycle. I think the ultimate cure here is going to be overall legislation that's going to make the entire fashion industry more sustainable.
Like a federal legislation.
Yeah, but in the meantime, this is what we've got.
Is that something that's being worked on at all, Karen, that you know of?
I think at the moment, looking for federal legislation might be a longer-term pathway.
Yeah, sounds like it.
But I think that broader question of how can we think about choices that are sustainable, healthy, and affordable across the board? We can find those if you think about the whole picture of the conversation that we've had about secondhand fabrics, secondhand items, looking new in places where you understand the backdrop of how things have been produced, and recognizing there are multiple price points to buy sustainably and to have the kind of clothing wardrobe that is needed in a way that does not have to be adding to the 50 billion, now 100 billion pieces of clothing that are made each year.
Yeah, and plus the clothes are just absolutely beautiful. Kate, if I might say so myself, we'll leave it there. That's Kate Van Asten, who's founder of Wolfka. That's a size-inclusive, sustainable clothing line. We had Maria Fouché, who's co-founder of Monarch Thrift Shop and Monarch Lux in Avondale. And Karen Weigert, Reset's sustainability contributor. Thank you all so much.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic and edited by Dan Tucker. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. To make sure you never miss a conversation, hit subscribe wherever you listen or find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks so much for tuning in.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue, as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely